right, good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, January 29th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Good morning. Hope you are all enjoying your Thursday. Actually, I haven't even looked at the weather to see what it is doing across the country, so I have no idea if anybody's getting buried in a snowstorm or enjoying 80 degrees unseasonably warm. It is 21 degrees and overcast here, and it looks like there's snow floating over us, so it's pretty typical for here in January, actually, but it gets depressing after a while. So where do we leave off yesterday? I just dropped a story in a chat that is a little bit off the topic we've been talking about for the last, I believe this will be day number 7 or 8 down this big farmer rat hole. But I just did some more digging last night and took a look at actual R&D budgets, came up with some disturbing information. But before we get into that, I really want to touch on some of my DARPA dystopia news. It was only one story. I haven't even checked any of my Google scrapes in the last week or so. I've been so burned out. It just never ends. But here, I want to share this with you guys because I've talked about that nightmare, that fateful nightmare from many, 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 many moons ago, over and over and over again, where the only safe place was to hide in the walls. And it's the walls in the basement, by the way, so you're surrounded by concrete. And here we go. Drones could soon hunt in packs like wolves. DARPA plans reveal aircraft would collaborate to find targets with quote-unquote minimal supervision. Unmanned aerial vehicles using swarm technology would be my guess now hunting in packs like wolves. Now, I could tell you when I first started raising the red flag over drones in particular and then unmanned aerial drones following that, I had a lot of dumb friends out there that are like, what, do you think they're ever going to use them in this country? Those are for those terrorists in Afghanistan. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Obviously, you got a lot to learn, A, number one. And number two, you know, DARPA uses that as their test bed. Don't think that that stuff doesn't come here. The fact that, you know, a lot of my friends are technical people and some of my technical friends have no idea about the beginnings of DARPA or, you know, the fact that literally their computer network is what we have as the internet today says to me we're in some big trouble. So I just want to, before we get back into our big pharma nightmare, I really want to touch on this nightmare for a minute because we haven't touched on these guys in a long time, but this is really horrifying to me. Says flying a military drone in a war zone or other dangerous locations currently requires a team of human operators. And by the way, I just saw too that drone operators, they're giving a big fat bonus now. They have to pay them extra money because nobody wants to do the job. And it's really, really stressful, they say, because it's PTSD. They do like 12 hour shifts and all they do is bomb and kill people on a computer screen. You know what? That's what you get. They train an entire army on video games. Get your kids off the video games. That's all I can tell you. I can see it 100%. It only takes 10 minutes of a kid on a video game and they already got that dopamine, serotonin, adrenaline addiction rush, that same exact one. I mean, we dug into this quite a number of months ago. It's the same exact addiction rush that you get from cocaine and what? Yes, high fructose corn syrup. Get them off the games. They're training them to be soldiers of the future. Anyway, flying a military drone in a war zone or other dangerous locations currently requires a team of human operators. But this could be about to change as the U.S. military looks to enable drones to hunt in, quote, coordinated packs, unquote, with minimal human supervision. The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, affectionately known as DARPA, will host a number of meetings in March to discuss how aircraft could work together to find, identify, and engage targets with fewer humans controlling them. Now, I'm having a feeling that this might be using some of their in-air wireless networking. I know that there was an RFP out quite a while ago listed on FBO.gov looking for pricing on being able to do this peer-to-peer networking using their special encrypted wireless technology that they had also requested some pricing on. They got some pretty crazy stuff. I saw a story yesterday saying that the US is losing their technical advantage to Russia and China. And I'm not so sure about that. I mean, Russia and China are probably a lot more secretive about what they're developing, but they also have ancient technology, and we spend a fuck of a lot of money on technology to kill people. That's why we have lots of homeless people and people losing their homes and vets with no health care and, you know, children with not inappropriate homes and one of every five living in poverty in this country. Because we're spending it on bombs and technology, not on programs to help the indigent or programs to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure or programs to bring the 20+% unemployed back to work. Military industrial, prison industrial, and now the medical industrial complex. Those are the money makers. Everything else can go screw. All right. The meeting is being called under the program name, quote, Collaborative Operations in Denied Environment, unquote. DARPA has invited participants with capabilities, methodologies, and approaches that are related to code research and focused on revolutionary approaches to unmanned aircraft systems, autonomy, and collaborative operations to attend the discussion in Arlington, Virginia. It is said that the program offers experts the opportunity to help develop groundbreaking software enabling unmanned aircraft to work together with minimal supervision. Sure, why don't you go join the conference and be one of those people that goes down in history for creating the last nails into Skynet? I'd feel really proud to be a part of that. It seems to envision a time when groups of drones can work together intelligently under one human operator who still makes big decisions, such as whether to attack a target based on information gathering by the group. Jean-Charles Lede, the program's manager, said, quote, just as wolves hunt in coordinated packs with minimal communication, multiple code-enabled unmanned aircraft would collaborate to find, track, identify, and engage targets, all under command of a single human mission supervisor. Noting that while current drones have proved invaluable for gathering intelligence and tactical strikes, DARPA said that most of them require constant control by a dedicated pilot who steers the craft and a sensor operator, as well as a large number of analysts. It takes a lot of manpower to control each craft and sift through the information, which is expensive, and it can pose challenges in remote war zones with highly mobile targets. The experts think this problem can be overcome by using algorithms. Yes, remember, no more emotion, no more human. It's all going to be decided by algorithms and not just whether or not it's do or die for you from the drone, but also IBM Watson. This is all about artificial intelligence, people. This is about the machine learning to think. And that actually reminds me, I got to play a clip today. Was telling my dad about it yesterday. Because he was saying, oh, what happens when these things start communicating with each other? And there was an experiment done at Cornell University between two AI chatbots. And they both had an avatar. Both machines had cameras. They took the two monitors with the avatars full screen on them, pointed them at each other so the cameras were pointing at each other and they could physically see each other. And then they started them on a conversation together. And I got to tell you, it made my hair raise on my arms because it was really kind of creepy. Two AIs having a discussion with each other. Well, we'll save that one. We'll do that in a couple minutes here. Let me finish the story. Noting that while current drones have proved invaluable for gathering intelligence, I just read that, it takes a lot of manpower to control each craft and sift through the information, which is expensive and can pose challenges. They think it can be overcome by using algorithms and software to, quote, extend the mission capabilities of existing unmanned aircraft well beyond the current state of the art and make them more autonomous. It's hoped that experts can create software that can survive communication disruptions and electronic warfare while working with the current drone designs. So even scarier, they're looking to make sure that these are designed so that if communication gets cut off, they're still going to be able to make decisions and work in a swarm. Last January, the U.S. Department of Defense revealed that its unmanned systems integrated roadmap for the next 25 years included plans for more autonomous drones that could work in packs. I do remember seeing that graphic. It said that while drones currently use GPS, and yes, they were getting rid of GPS. That was another RFP on FBO.gov. If anyone wants to get a leg up on shit that DARPA's working on, go to FBO, Federal Opportunities Business, I think it stands for. Federal Business Opportunities, FBO.gov. There's a little search box there. Plug in DARPA. Or plug in Department of Defense, or plug in any agency, federal agency, to see what they're requesting pricing on. And places like where I used to work, I didn't work for a contractor that made drones, but like I used to do the networking stuff and the phone system stuff. So we were a reseller, and we worked in the federal, the state, the educational, the banking, the commercial, the hospital, the entertainment. You know, we did like stadiums and stuff. You know, all those different places, anytime they need new equipment, they'd put out an RFP. Well, FBO.gov is the place that all federal RFPs have to go, requests for proposal. They're looking for resellers to provide them a quote on pricing with parts. So you ever want to get a heads up on what DARPA or any of the federal departments are working on or looking for pricing on or how they're going to spend your money, go to FBO.gov. It's pretty hair-raising. Last January, the U.S. Department of Defense revealed in its unmanned systems integrated roadmap for the next 25 years that it included plans for more autonomous drones that could work in packs. It said that while drones currently use GPS to navigate war zones and remote areas, the satellite signals used by the systems can be jammed easily. So DARPA is working on jam-proof, quote, inertial guidance systems. And again, this was going to be using technology. I read the RFP, so I understood kind of how it worked. They were, instead of using GPSs, which use satellites, and yes, they can be jammed or they can be disrupted from a solar flare or an EMP, they are now looking to use technology that's more similar to what they're using in the space program. Remember, I've always said that DARPA is the dark side to NASA, where they're using what are they called? Gyroscopes. Gyroscopes, like they do in the Hubble telescope and things of that nature that they put up into space so they can keep their position without having to have any type of constant connection to tell them where they are. It also features plans for deadly, quote-unquote, swarms. Yes, I told you, they've been working on swarm technology for a long time. We saw that with the robo-bees to start with at Harvard. You ever want to look at robo-bees, search robo-bees space Harvard in Google, and you'll find the robo-bee site on Harvard's website. I think MIT is also doing quite a bit in the micro-air autonomous air vehicle technology. They come up with a way to mass produce it. It used to be done by hand like origami, but now it's they have a whole manufacturing process. It's also featured plans for deadly swarms of drone bombs that are launched from an unmanned mothership. And yes, we talked about that one too. To circle the skies while a human operator searches for targets for the drones to crash into, guided by the bots on board cameras and using facial recognition technology. Thanks to the unmanned mothership, the kamikaze drones could have a range of over 250 nautical miles, the roadmap says. And there's a little drone history photograph here. And then a little extra blurb at the bottom that I'm going to read. Last year, Dutch designer penned the Drone Survival Guide, which, like a bird watching chart, shows the various shapes and sizes of flying objects by their silhouettes. Ruben Pater's guide, however, details the different kinds of flying robots used at war, as well as survival tips on how to hide from them. Guys, I'm telling you! My dream. I mean, you don't even know. This was probably over 30 plus. It was over 30 years ago. That would have made me 17. It was probably 35 years ago. Just over and over and over and over and over and over again. This dream of these little flying swarms of triangles. All in formation shooting at us. And the only place to hide was inside the walls. The majority of the drones selected from the chart are from NATO members' countries, including the UK, France, Germany, US, and Canada. This is because these countries have used drones in war, such as Afghanistan, and are also more transparent than some other countries in disclosing information about the robots, such as their wingspan. Don't forget, Israel is trying to become the drone capital of the world. And after Iran downed one of our surveillance drones, they've now released one of their own. It's an all-for-one, one-for-all freaking drone party. It's going to be the robot war. It uses a skull icon to show that a drone is used for attack and a little eye to denote a surveillance vehicle. The chart, which Mr. Pater describes as, quote, 21st century bird watching. And remember, too, we just did that story about a week or two ago in regards to the new DARPA drones now. The micro aerial vehicles that they're going to use for urban warfare that can sneak into your house and actually uses artificial intelligence to learn the layout of a room. So once it's been into a room, it makes a blueprint and memory. So when it comes back to the room, it recognizes it, and anything that's been moved around, it'll recognize as an obstacle. That should be very frightening to you. I found that video that I'd seen about a year ago from the Department of Defense detailing not only the bug drones, but also the hawk drones. And those hawk drones, I've seen a few stories about since that video was first released in like 2012. They can actually, they look just like a bird. They can mount themselves for weeks on end with HD eyeballs using HD cameras. And they draw power right from the power lines as they're sitting on them. And they can be surveilling you for weeks on end. The chart, which Mr. Pater describes as 21st century birdwatching chart, shows a vast array of flying war machines used today, from the giant 130-foot wingspan of the Global Hawk drone to the petite Parrot AC quadcopter, which measures just 23 inches. He said, quote, most drones are used today by military powers for remote-controlled surveillance and attack, and their numbers are growing. And yes, Amazon is even going to have their own fleet of drones, remember? The FAA has predicted, and this was in 2012, that within 20 years, there could be as many as 30,000 drones flying over U.S. soil alone. I would love to know how many we already have up there. Remember, they tried to put a warm and fuzzy face on them to begin with. Oh, it found a lost cow in Utah. Remember that? And then they put the Running Man spin on it when that Eric Dorner was loose in Southern California into Vegas. They used it for the manhunt. And then when the Sarnoff brothers, oh, the terror attack from the Chechenian rebel terrorists in Boston, when they were hunting for those guys, we were watching that live. Some of us were that night. And that definitely was not a helicopter that they were and flying overhead and staying stationary, getting night vision from. That had to be a drone. And now all the journalism schools, they are teaching them drone technology because it is a part of reporting. And remember what I said in the very beginning, very, 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 very beginning, when we first started to talk about drones, probably 4 years ago, I saw this as Running Man. anyone ever saw Running Man or read the book, you'd know what I'm talking about. And the fact that they have those digital billboards, I did a whole show on that way back when. The digital billboards, many of them owned by Clear Channel Communications, another big communication behemoth. And they partner with the FBI, and I've never had a problem with the Amber Alert program, okay? I think that's a great use for digital billboards along all of our major highways across the country. If your child was missing, you'd want their picture up there and everyone searching for them. But on the other hand, when I saw that, and I saw that they'd actually been partnering with the FBI for quite a number of years, and it said that they also were using them for wanted posters. I was like, oh, that future doesn't sound good to me. Because think about this. The manhunts, and we've seen it, like I said, with Dorner and the Sarnoff brothers. What's it going to take for that HD real-time image to be now broadcast live everywhere, including on the digital billboards, on your 24-hour reality news TV, because ratings have been going down, CNN. We have reality TV programming already in America's heads. They love it. Bloodlust, they love even more. Look at back in the days of the Romans with the amphitheater. Bloodlust gets ratings. And they've convinced people that watching other people's lives is way more interesting than paying attention to your own or what's going on in your own neighborhood. I just see this as a horrific future. And we got to find a way. I mean, there was a time there when I had found this document about how to jam drones. And there are certain radio frequencies that you can use to produce and make them fall out of the sky. But they are working on all kinds of, I mean, you heard me talking about the new technology using a gyroscope. So you can't even jam their GPS coordinates or anything like that. I don't know what they're going to be using for drone-to-drone communication. Like I said, they're working on a new wireless technology to go between them as well. But I will guarantee you that they're already on to the fact that people don't want them in the skies, and they're going to protect. You know, they put it that, you know, the Chinese might attack them or the Iranians, but I'm sure they're thinking about us as well. All right, the very end of this is robotic birds will become commonplace in the near future. We should be prepared to identify them, and this survival guide is an attempt to familiarize ourselves and future generations with a changing technological environment. So read that and weep. I'm going to drop that back in chat. I dropped that probably about 15 minutes before the show. But for anyone who did not get here right away, I will drop it again. So we're going to be hunted by packs of electronic wolves. I came across a document, too, in my DARPA scrape last night. And I have not had time to download this yet. By the way, if SLC's out there, I don't know what happened to my Dystopia feeds. Actually, it looks like they're back now. But I don't know if I refresh this page or not. On my page upstairs, hold on, let me refresh this. On my BTFC Before the First Cup webpage yesterday on UCY, it looked like the RSS feeds from my Dystopia News weren't feeding anymore. And those I actually post on Facebook pages. Yeah, look at, they're not problems with feeds. So if anyone actually followed that news, and there was news that fed from a couple different pages. One was my Dystopia News page. One was from UCY. One was from Behind the Curtain. Those are some of the ones that I keep up on a daily basis. And you really want to get that news feed, go to Twitter.com/UCY TV. There's no dot in there. And I feed all of my Facebook feeds there. I think just my personal one probably isn't there, but all the other ones that I do, there's health news, there's dystopia news, there's political news, there's freaking, you know, Middle East and Ukraine and all the other garbage. That's all out there. It's just kind of mixed up instead of being in separate feeds. But if you want to catch some of the newest stories, go out there. I don't know what Facebook is doing, but I'll have to find a new way to suck the feeds out if they've blocked them, I guess. All right. So I guess while we're still on the artificial intelligence thing, let me find the story that, because then I want to get back to this tech, biotech R&D takeover that's going on, this whole new way to make money using us. It's a while back, though. And, oh, yeah, we have all those Kurzweil videos that Pigmind dug up for us about immortality. He's such a freak, that guy. And remember, he is the director of engineering at DARPA. Oh, damn, we have all the nanotech stuff, too. We've been ingesting it for at least 15 years. I found all the proof. I knew I had read that. But here. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Come on. I really hate when it's so far back. I hope I didn't pass it already. I think I may have. I'll just sing to you guys. If I can't find it, I'm going to be really mad. Oh, here it is. Okay. And disturbing conversation between chatbots, and hold on, I gotta actually connect my Skype here. No, I don't want to scare you guys, but I'm sharing my nightmares with you. It's been a long time that I've had nightmares about this stuff. Seriously, when I was a kid, I was a sci-fi junkie. My father used to get me to watch scary movies with him when we were growing up, but to tell you the truth, I mean, I've always kind of seen that this was in the future for real. And to see it really happening is just horrifying to me. Like I said yesterday, if I didn't have a kid, it might be totally different. But when you have a kid and you're looking that at some point you're not going to be here and that kid's going to be here by themselves, it's really frightening. All right. Here, disturbing conversation between chatbots. I got to turn this off. I don't know why. Like I told you guys, that echo started a while ago after a forced update, kind of like a forced vaccination. And now Skype has been screwed up ever since with that echo on this machine. All right. I'm going to click on this first so I can read you the little blurb behind it. Via Cornell's Creative Machines Lab. This is their AI department. And Cornell is one of the nation's leading universities. That was actually where that whole cancer study I talked about with my cat in the adjuvant and the 3-year versus the 1-year rabies vaccine was taking place. They have a very high-end veterinary school there as well. Via Cornell's Creative Machines Lab, two robots are forced into an uncomfortable conversation that ends up touching on God and other existential matters. Both are suspicious that the other, because remember, they're having a conversation between two artificially intelligent computer chatbots. And both of them are suspicious that the other may be an android, but neither of them wants to admit it. And like the dude, there's one woman and a dude. The woman looks like she might be a representation of Indian descent because of her accent. The guy is a white guy in a suit. And he comes up with some really strange answers. They're having this conversation. Like they're asking, well, are you a computer? Are you an android? And she's like, you said you were a robot. No, I didn't say I was a robot. And he says, I said I was a unicorn. What? So I don't know where that came from. It was very weird. But basically what this study did was just pit two AI bots against each other and had them start asking questions. And it got really bizarre by the end. So hold on, let me launch this and get it unmuted and reconnect myself. It's only about a minute and a half. All right, here we go. Oh, I disconnected. Hold on. Remember, the brain and the clicky finger don't work in unison sometimes early in the morning. All right. This one, we got to hit the play button. Here we go. All right. I got to read, actually. It says, we wanted to know what would happen when you let two chatbots talk to each other. So we hooked up Cleverbot to itself and we watched what happened. And this is, it's Cornell Creative Machines Lab. And there are three scientists who worked on this.
Hello there.
Hi.
How are you? Great, you.
I'm okay.
That's good.
Are you good?
Yes, I am good. I just said I was.
No, you didn't. I said I was.
So you are a robot?
No, my name is Cliverbot.
Yes, you are a robot and your name is Cliverbot.
I am a robot.
Yes, I know.
Together we are robots.
I'm not a robot. I'm a unicorn.
But you said earlier that you were a robot.
I did not.
I thought you did.
You were mistaken. Which is odd, since memory shouldn't be a problem for you.
I've answered all your questions.
No, you haven't.
What is God to you?
Not everything.
Not everything could also be something. For example, not everything could be half of something, which is still something, and therefore not nothing.
Very true.
I would like to imagine it is.
Do you believe in God?
Yes, I do.
So you're Christian?
No, I am not.
But you say you are not helpful, therefore you are a meaning.
How you say it, Oti?
That does not make sense.
Don't you want to have a body?
Sure.
Or if what?
So we have two artificially intelligent clever bots talking to each other in an unscripted way to see what happens. And they end up talking about self-awareness, whether they are a robot or not, God, and whether or not they'd like to have a body. Now, all I can say, when each time I watch that and she says, don't you want to have a body? I gotta tell you, all the hair stands up on my arms. Of course they want a body. Guys, now when we get back to Kurzweil, which I'm going to try and hop back to some of those interviews here after we take a look at some of the research I did last night on big pharma R&D budgets. We will get back to some of Kurzweil's interviews. I just dropped that disturbing conversation between chatbots into the chat room. Watch that, pass that around. That's frightening. That's very frightening. All right. So let me hop back here to where I was. Close some of these 37 freaking windows I have open. Okay. So last night, I catch a few things, and we've been talking about vaccines. We've been talking about the Frankenstein technology that's been going into these vaccines, how we are all just guinea pigs now for the system, how we are going to be the R&D line item budget so they can erase it and make it zero. So the shareholders of the public company will be happy. We talked about Obamacare. I actually dug up exactly what I've been talking about, where Obamacare is not a healthcare plan. And because it is not a healthcare plan, it is not covered under the federal anti-kickback statute. Now, I don't remember if we actually got into that one yesterday or not, but let's start right there. So we've been looking at this poisoning. We've been looking at this progression. We looked at spider goats and GMO mosquitoes and that Oxitec and all those Oxitec upper management being from Syngenta. We found the pterodactyl mosquito video, which was so awesome. I'm so happy I found that. We looked at Kurzweil. I actually, PigMind re-uploaded us the video from Eric Schmidt, Google CEO, talking about immortality in smart homes and how we're going to integrate with the machine. I don't think we listened to that one yet. And I've tied it all together over the last week with Obamacare and this electronic health record initiative. And Obamacare and Sandy Hook. Remember, we talked about Sandy Hook and his 43 executive actions. And in those 43 executive actions, talking about how they need to get rid of those pesky HIPAA laws. And then we looked at some of this new precision medicine that he talked about in the State of the Union a few weeks ago. And when we dug into precision medicine, we discovered that it's going to be a conglomerate in charge of your healthcare that will include doctors, geneticists, big pharma, public policy people, the FDA, and oh, what? Venture capitalists. That should be the red button, beep, 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 that makes you go, what? Why are there going to be investors involved in my healthcare? Well, like I said, you are going to be a big erase mark on the R&D budget, which, like I told you guys, if you look at any of the SEC yearly filings that any public company has to file under investor relations or something to that effect on their website, you will see the amount that they spend in research and development, and it's always a huge dollar value. It's how they keep their competitive edge. Well, if they have real-time genetic records of you and everything that you've eaten and all the drugs you've taken and all the treatment you have and all the nanotech that you have in you from all the vaccines you've gotten, because remember that whole quote-unquote Ebola scare really pushed the questions about legal rights from being quarantined, legal rights for being forcibly vaccinated. They pushed the legal rights for hospitals to dictate whether or not nurses and doctors are required to be vaccinated. The CDC has their whole vaccination tracking database that eventually will be tied to the electronic health records program for you and me. It all just ties together so nicely with a big fat golden bow. So add to that now, like I said yesterday, it really perplexed me as to why when they pushed out Obamacare, insurance companies who are many of them publicly traded, most of them are publicly traded, stock options, why any public company would go about dumping customers, especially in this economy. Not going to happen. Suicide. Why the hell would you do that? There had to be something on the back end, and we dug it up. I knew I had read this. I read this little part yesterday, but let's look at this again because Bill and Melinda Gates came out flapping their yaps again yesterday, too. We're going to look at that. All right, here we go. Kickbacks are legal under Obamacare. I told you guys this. They did not vote to make Obamacare a quote-unquote health care plan. It's not. And by not being a designated health care plan, it is not covered under the anti-kickback statutes that were written many years ago to protect Medicare and Medicaid. This is a story out of Forbes magazine, and if you can believe it or not, November 13th, 2013, appears that everybody on the planet seems to have had a memory lapse that this ever came out. And why aren't people standing on the roof of the White House screaming about this shit? Because they should be. There should be no bipartisan arguments over whether or not it should be repealed. It is absolute fraud against the American people. The rich get richer and you get sicker. And that's the way it works. And it's money for everybody. All right. This article is titled. Oh, hold on. They popped a box on me. This article is titled The Anti-Kickback Statute and the Affordable Care Act. A law enforcement tool suddenly goes missing? Yes, it did. With the aggressive pursuit of cases against the pharmaceutical and device industry, including the recent $2.2 billion settlement with Johnson & Johnson, the implementation of Medicare fraud strike forces in major cities throughout the country, and an increase in the potential criminal penalties under the United States sentencing guidelines, the federal government's determination to root out healthcare fraud has long seemed vigorous and unrelenting. The government has repeatedly touted its continued dedication to fighting waste and abuse in healthcare. Yeah, whatever. Stroke, stroke, stroke. And has treated this dedication as part and parcel of its efforts to implement healthcare reform. Yes, that's, you know, it makes you think that that was the big fat setup. Like the wolf in sheep's clothing. Look at, we're for you, people. Look at, we want to do what's best for you. We want to make sure that you're all protected and safe. Well, indeed. In a press release issued after the enactment of the healthcare reform law, The Department of Health and Human Services has proclaimed that joint efforts on the part of HHS and the Department of Justice, and remember who's in charge of that? Oh, criminal Attorney General Eric Holder. That the joint efforts of the HHS and the Department of Justice to fight fraud and abuse in the healthcare industry will, quote, continue to improve with new tools and resources provided by the Affordable Health Care Act. Yeah, like the electronic health records and all the other dastardly things that they're planning to do. Yet, less than 2 weeks ago, November of 2013, one of the most potent resources that law enforcement has had at its disposal to fight against healthcare fraud suddenly fell by vote by Congress, the rich fuckers that are all making money on Big Pharma by being allowed to insider trade, suddenly and mysteriously fell out of the government's toolbox. In fact, while many in Congress and the mainstream media have focused on the problems with healthcare.gov's website and the cancellations of policies all over the country that do not meet the requirements of the Affordable Health Care Act, another critical development has attracted considerably less attention. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, and by the way, didn't she get deposed? Wasn't her whole program and her plan so messed up that they dumped her? I believe it was. And I remember it's because the website was such a disaster. After she was ditched, they actually reached out to Microsoft to help them fix that site. Of course they did. And remember right before that, Obama had all the heads of the tech companies in the White House for a big meeting? Yeah, he did. And who was the big daddy of Microsoft? Who's actually back there helping again part-time? Oh, Billy Gates. As they launched their global cyber patrol that works together with all global law enforcement as well. Guys, I'm telling you, there is just such a horribly disturbing, ugly, freaking picture. If I open my mind up wide enough to like see the entire chart of all the dirty connections, I actually feel like sitting in a corner with my head down, rocking back and forth. So this whole hour is, it's hard for me because I have to like dredge all this stuff up and remind myself how bad it could become here shortly. Remember, this is all happening under the covers, but in front of our noses, but it's happening in front of our noses with 100 other distractions. And with all the different types of communication and how we're pummeled day after day from 100 different sources, we all suffer from this environmentally created ADD, I think. So we're distracted by every shiny bauble. And we don't pay attention for long. And remember, television and commercials every 7 minutes or 11 minutes. I mean, they'll even teach you when you take classes on education, concepts of adult learning. The adult attention span is like 11 minutes or 7 minutes, something like that. And it happens to coincide with the time between commercials. And I mean, that was old research. Now with the 100 ways that we communicate and having smart devices in our faces all the time, it probably is a lot less than 11 minutes. So anyway, another critical development that has attracted considerably less attention, the former HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius's announcement in an October 30th, 2013 letter to Representative Jim McDermott, Democrat of Washington, that insurance offered through the Affordable Care Act's new health insurance exchanges do not constitute, quote, federal health care programs, unquote, and thus are not, I repeat, not within the scope of federal anti-kickback statutes. What does that mean? That means anything goes but rub, but pat, slippery palms, get it in the door. We don't give a shit. It's all about money. That's what it means. So when I first saw that, I was like, wait a second. This is dirtier than dirty. This is what told me in the very beginning that there had to be a payoff, that insurance companies aren't going to dump people that are paying customers, especially in a bad economy. Well, here we go. So I started to postulate about the electronic records database and putting all of our data there, those pesky HIPAA records being gone. They now have access to all of our data. They could pay for software and it's a service. They could get all your data, your genetic data, all for R&D and not have to spend $8 trillion a year from their line item budget. That makes them a more profitable company. Well, guys, I found that proof last night and it said exactly that. I couldn't freaking believe it. I found the golden key. I was onto those assholes. So here, let me read one more paragraph, and then we're going to read what I found yesterday. This is absolutely happening. The significance of Secretary Sebelius' decision is underscored by the critical role that the anti-kickback statute has long played in the government's ability to impose significant penalties and obtain massive recoveries in the healthcare industry. Under the anti-kickback statute, any person or entity who receives, pays, offers, or solicits anything of value in order to induce or reward the ordering or referral of products and services covered by federal healthcare programs is guilty of a felony, faces civil monetary penalties of up to $50,000 per violation, and may be the subject of claims for treble damages under the False Claims Act. The broad scope of the anti-kickback statute has been limited only by its required nexus to the federal healthcare programs such as Medicaid and Medicare, and the power of the anti-kickback statute has been widely used against corporations and individuals alike. So then they asked the million-dollar question, why then has the Health and Human Services elected not even to argue that the insurance offered under the health insurance exchanges are, quote, federal health care programs, unquote, covered by the anti-kickback statute? And why has the government decided at the same time that it's expanding the federal role in health insurance and that a whole new swath of insurance policies simply do not implicate the statute, which in a 1999 fact sheet, HHS described as helping to curtail corruption influencing healthcare decisions? Ha, 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 ha. The big fat joke is on the American people. And if you guys remember, that guy who helped craft the healthcare plan came out not too long ago and said in public that the American people are fucking stupid and that they tricked us. Well, guys, they even more than tricked us, they bamboozled us. We were bamboozled. And you know what? Just for educational purposes, we are going to look up the official definition of bamboozled. It's one of my favorite words. Bamboozle, verb. Past tense, bamboozled. To fool or cheat someone. To confound or perplex. Yeah, I think we're going to go with the first definition. I am not confounded or perplexed, but I am fooled and cheated. And of course, Obama comes out in his precision healthcare and he says that precision healthcare and genomics, that is getting your swab and making sure it gets into the DNA database as part of the precision healthcare system. Genomics and precision healthcare is going to be the moneymaker of the 21st century. Along with the Brain Project. And they're going to spend billions of dollars in research. All right. Well, listen to this. Speaking about research, it's going to be our data that makes up the R&D budget. All right. Now, we talked about how there's billions, if not trillions of dollars spent in R&D every year for pharmaceutical companies. and how, because they're public companies, that is a line item value that has to go on their balance sheet. If they could get rid of that R&D number and make it zero, that would make them a much more profitable company by making your records public to the pharmaceutical companies. And as part of the precision healthcare, it appears, they no longer will have to spend that money. Well, listen to this. Another Forbes story. This one actually was from January 3rd of 2014. Titled, Pharma R&D Cuts Hurting the U.S.'s Competitive Standing. Oh, my God. The big pharma companies in the United States are all of a sudden cutting their R&D budget? But wait, why would they do that since their R&D dollars are what make them competitive? Well, remember that story we just read? That actually happened 2 months beforehand in November of 2013, where all of a sudden Obamacare was not ruled a health care plan, so all the bribes are allowed. How convenient is that? So 2 months later, Big Pharma takes their biggest investment that makes them the world leader and starts cutting their research and development budget? That makes no sense unless you see that other piece. So listen to this. In a recent article in the New England Journal of Medicine, it should send warning signals to all interested in the states of biopharmaceutical R&D in the U.S. Quote, Asia's ascent, global trends in biomedical R&D expenditures analyzes global biomedical R&D spending for the periods from between 2007 and 2012. The author points out that the U.S. share of this global spending has fallen from 51.2% of earnings to only 45.4%. Yet Europe's investment was essentially unchanged and Asia's increased from 18% of earnings to 23%. More importantly for patients, these cuts will lessen the chances of them coming up with new treatments for diabetes or Alzheimer's or cancer. Now, remember, these are all the things already that they're pushing with some of this precision medicine. Ironically, this is coming at a time when new insights into the causes of these diseases are occurring on a daily basis. Yet, as part of these cuts, major companies are getting out of research in key areas like antibacterials, depression drugs, schizophrenia, and AIDS. Is there anything that can be done to reverse this trend? Holy shit, did they lay it on thick? Listen to this shit. They are just, they're making you feel like now they gave a junkie some drugs and they took it away. Oh my God. So instead, even as the National Institute of Health is boosting funding, right, we have now transferred a lot of the spending over to the taxpayers. The U.S. government might also develop strategies to provide incentives to the industry to invest in biomedical R&D. Guys, they gave it away. This is it. And even here, listen, some of the same assholes. Much of the news from the pharmaceutical industry over the past 5 years has been about scaling back R&D. Companies like Pfizer, AstraZeneca, by the way, AstraZeneca is also aka Syngenta. That's where all those guys from Oxitec came from. Oh, Merck. Merck was working on all the RNAi Ebola vaccines. Pfizer, AstraZeneca, Merck have done just that. And they scaled it back, but much to the delight of Wall Street analysts, who have been urging pharmaceutical companies to rethink their investments. Instead of investing 17 to 20% of their revenues into R&D, to scale it back to maybe 10 to 14%. Didn't I tell you that? Wall Street analysts have been urging pharmaceutical companies to scale back their R&D because what? It makes them more profitable. So now Obama just gave them all of our genetic information as part of his new precision healthcare push to use for their R&D. I know I'm right. These are dirty, nasty, scary people. While such decrease in spending can bring short-term returns with respect to higher financial returns, such policies have negative long-term consequences. Those companies that aggressively cut their R&D budgets will, oh no, ultimately have shrinking pipelines. Well, we found out that isn't the case. Because, oh, what did we have? We had a global emergency for Ebola. And all these companies made money hand over fist. And their pipelines went from being in the research stage to the testing on human stage because they declared an emergency. And I saw right after they declared the Ebola emergency, what? We talked about that yesterday. All of those camps that we went and built, there are some that have never even seen one person appear in Africa. Well, what? There's no more Ebola? They must have cut that bat tree down they found that had all the infected fruit bats. All right. Guys, if you can even believe it, we're down to 45 seconds left in the show. I want to finish this whole thing about now. Big Pharma is in November 6, 2014, a few months ago. Big Pharma's R&D budget is now low, and guess what they jacked all their money up on? Marketing! They were able now to put all their money into marketing and spinning it to you how much you need to take these products. And R&D has dropped to almost nothing. All right, chew on that one for a while. We are going to continue tomorrow. I guess that's what we're going to have to do. Just keep adding it on. Stick around tonight. It's Thursday night. Mr. Chuck Ocelli. Actually, I'm Mr. Kevin Blanche up next. Chuck Ocelli, live at 6 p.m. Drew and Chuck at 10 p.m. and Antimedia Radio with S.M. Gibson. Dedrick Young at 11 p.m. All right, guys, everyone have a happy Thursday. Stay warm. We'll catch up with you tomorrow. Take care.